today you endorsed John McCain and Barack Obama on TechCrunch. First time you guys have ever done an endorsement in a in any political realm, right?
Well, we weren't around, you know, the last election. Right. We just started in 2005. And it seemed to me that over the last year, watching a lot of our leaders who are already in office and some of the candidates really don't know much about technology at all.
Right.
And if you think about how important technology is to our culture and our economy, it seems like we deserve as voters to at least know where they stand on some of the issues. So
right.
we started pressing them to go on record on, you know, 10, 11 key technology questions. And we had a lot of success in getting them to come on and record podcasts with us, which
right.
are just recorded conversations we put on the net. We nailed them down on the 10 issues. And then we thought, why not do a reader poll? Let them look at all the evidence and say, you know, if you're voting just on the technology issues, not taking everything else into consideration, who's the best president for that?
Yeah.
We spent about a month taking user votes. We ended that yesterday. And then today we took that into account and we made our own endorsements.
So let's go through them.
Yeah.
Why Barack Obama? Because you seem to be much more bullish on Obama than McCain. But start out with Obama.
Yeah.
Why Obama?
So, you know, traditionally, I've actually been more of a conservative voter. But Barack's definitely getting my vote this time. He's the youngest candidate. He's 46 years old. He's extremely optimistic about the future. A lot of the candidates you know, have had success in playing on the fears of people and talking about what's wrong and maybe how they can fix it. Barack talks about that, but he really talks about what American, you know, it can be great and what we can do for the future. And that really resonates with Silicon Valley because we're always thinking about technology and how it can make our lives better. So just on a psychological basis, he resonates with the Valley because a lot of financial supporters there, and he's going to do very well in California, I think. But when it actually comes down to the nitty gritty of the issues themselves, he's done more than any other candidate to at least state what he thinks about all the key issues.
Right.
And, you know, I won't go through all of them, but there's things that are pretty important, like the digital divide, getting school children internet access and computers at least at school, even if they don't have them at home.
Right.
And there's still a lot of American schools that don't have internet access and certainly don't have many computers for children. So what are we going to do about that? Well, a lot of the candidates say that's education. The federal government needs to stay out of it. And there are reasons why that makes sense, but it doesn't help the problem.
Right.
And so Barack and other Democrats have expressed interest in finding ways to either get money or somehow funnel funds and other resources into schools. Another one is net neutrality. So if you think about, and that's a real, I mean, it puts me to sleep when I start to think about net neutrality, but it's important because
it's one of those mind-bending things.
And if you think about all the startups, you know, back when Google was just a baby company and Yahoo was just a baby company, and they all now hire thousands of workers and they provide all these jobs and all this tax money to the government. Well, when they were startups, what if the rules were such that they had to pay a lot more to get access to internet users?
Yeah.
Or what if the bigger companies at the time, the Microsofts, could pay money to the internet providers to stop access to the startups? They wouldn't have a level playing field and they may have never become what they are today. And so the whole idea of net neutrality is to say, hey, we need a level playing field and everybody needs to pay the same for internet access and get the same access to the same people.
Okay. So now that's Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Why John McCain? Because John McCain is a self-admitted, he's almost a Luddite. I mean, he's never turned
on a
computer.
Self-admitted Luddite. And so that made it somewhat difficult. If you look at the way the users voted on our site, not only was Barack my first choice, but he was also the users, our readers' first choice by far. If you look at the Republican side, Ron Paul won by a landslide. Now, Ron Paul is a great candidate, but he tends to have some rather rabid internet supporters that tend to go from site to site to site, leave comments that are pro-Ron Paul, attacking other candidates, voting on anything that has to do with him, which is great for Ron Paul. But you have to take that into consideration when you look at the results. Now, we had a second place was John McCain, and then it sort of went from there. And when I look at how the candidates fell on the issues, there really was no perfect Republican candidate. In fact, by far, there is no perfect technology candidate from the Republican side. The pro-market approach of the Republicans says government is supposed to stay out of the markets, which, again, that's something that personally I generally agree with. But when you're talking about net neutrality, it's a bad thing because companies in monopoly situations can do really bad things in the market.
Right.
Another example is our mobile phone situation here in the U.S. We have a handful of carriers that we can choose from when we get a mobile phone. They charge you up the you know what to have in, to have access to make a few phone calls. You can't, browsing sucks. You SMS and texting is only really been around for a couple of years in Europe and Asia. They've been doing it forever. And all the great services that they have around the world, people here don't even know about. A lot of the most exciting mobile startups are happening in Asia and Europe. They don't even bother touching the US market. And the reason is when we sold the rights to the spectrum, the first time around, we got a lot of money from the government got a lot of money, but there were no rules. The carriers could do whatever they wanted. So what they did is they put up walls to stop their users from leaving. Now they're the government is auctioning off a new mobile spectrum out,
the 700 megahertz.
And it's really exciting. And Google came in and said, look, we want to participate, but everything has to be open. You can buy any handset anywhere, pair it with any service provider and change it four times a month if you want to and keep your phone number. And we want to be able to allow anybody to create a new application. So if you think about it, your mobile phone will be just like your computer in that you can open up a browser and do anything you want. Any software you want to put on it, you can, but it'll just be really small. So we think that the government should say, we're going to take less money this time, but we're going to make sure that everyone has open standards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Republicans, sadly, in my opinion, sadly, want to stay out of that market again. And we might have a repeat of what happened before. We'll have a much smaller mobile economy in the United States because of that.
Right. All that aside, why pick John McCain?
So he was the best of the worst, as I like to put it. So, you know, McCain, again, putting aside McCain, everything else about him. I mean, the guy was a war hero, a POW. I mean, he's got a tremendous sort of elder statesman status and can be a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you disagree with his politics. Putting all that aside, the man understands, it seems to me, based on my interview with him, where to touch the markets and where to stay away. He's okay. willing to think about net neutrality as a potential problem at least and willing to move to if something starts to happen there. He's clearly dedicated to trying to find a way to bridge the digital divide, even though education is traditionally outside of the federal government's purview. And in general, he's a free marketer.
Okay.
So I think that overall he's the most reasonable pro-market candidate that the Democrats have put forward, and the fact that he came in second in user voting for our site meant that we gave him the endorsement. But if you look at my post on this on the site, I said I talked for a Brock about, you know, this long, which you can't see because we're on radio, but, you know, like eight paragraphs, and McCain maybe four paragraphs, mostly apologizing for the McCain piece. And I said my personal vote's going to Brock.
So now I'm going to give you a new job. Technology policy advisor to a candidate.
Yeah.
Give me first thoughts on what you would tell this candidate. What would you tell Hillary Clinton that she needs to do, that she should be doing to get the net community behind her?
Well, the first thing, Hillary Clinton's an interesting example. I think she considered California sort of in the bag. And she hasn't done much campaigning in California. And suddenly, and I really think out of nowhere, suddenly they're realizing her campaign is that Silicon Valley is solidly behind Barack. So in Hillary's case, specifically, I would have already been spending a lot of time in Silicon Valley. One of the things the candidates aren't doing is addressing these issues until we force them to do it. And they aren't stating what their policies are in much of anything. With regard to tech. We force them to do it. They go on record. Hillary hasn't spoken to us. We actually have been in contact with her campaign throughout the entire process. We almost scheduled a time to go with her first instead of Mitt Romney, who went first with us. But she's the only major candidate other than Huckabee who we haven't spoken to yet. And really, I think her opinion on these issues would be valid. So the first step is look at what Barack did. He's basically hired a CTO for his campaign, and he's put significant amount of time into thinking through intelligent policies on tech issues. Whether you agree with him or not, at least you know where he stands. Hillary, there's a lot of issues where, you know, you have no idea where she stands.
What about someone like Rudy Giuliani? He is all of a sudden having a real tough time, and we don't need to get into the whole problem of his strategy of focusing only on Florida, which seems to be backfiring on him. Is there a way that he could use the internet to kind of pull himself out of the doldrums?
Sure. Well, not at this point, frankly. See, you just bridged into another topic entirely, which is not how the candidates feel about technology issues, but how they use the internet to get support.
Which is going to be another question.
And I'd love to talk about that, but so maybe we'll put that aside. Yeah. Giuliani's problem is that he doesn't trust the internet. You know, there are pictures of him cross-dressing all over the internet. His campaign hates that. And he's traditionally, from our understanding, is he's not willing to embrace the internet, doesn't understand bloggers, for instance, doesn't know if he talks to them, if he's going to be humiliated. So generally speaking, we have had very little success with his campaign, whereas some of the other Republicans have come to us nervous at first, happy once they saw the results. So really, we just haven't talked to him too much, and I think that's a real problem for his campaign. Not that he didn't talk to us, but he's not talking to anybody.
So now let's get into how candidates can use the internet, because everyone's very good. They know how to work radio. They know how to work magazines. They know how to work TV.
Yeah.
It seems to me that it's almost like a scattershot approach. It's almost like a shotgun approach. They throw everything at the internet and hope that something sticks.
Yeah.
What are candidates doing right? Mm-hmm. And more importantly, what are they doing wrong to try and get the net community behind them?
So if you look, now we have some hindsight. If you look at what Barack Obama has done, it's been brilliant. He started one of the first MySpace communities and really promoted it. And he had, you know, as of a week or two ago, he had well over 300,000 MySpace friends. It was like 50,000 more than any other candidate.
Now, is that a function of him being younger and attracting younger voters? Or is it a function of him being very good on the internet?
He's been more aggressive about social networking and engaging with social networks than any other candidate. Now, he's clearly resonates more with the younger generation, and so that might have something to do with it as well. It might even be a more important factor. But whatever it is, he's had success on MySpace, on Facebook. He won the MySpace New Year's Eve poll, I think, you know, by a huge margin. He's all over YouTube. He just isn't afraid of technology. A lot of the candidates are. When candidates are afraid of technology, it worries me as a technologist that they'll really be willing to promote those policies in their government.
I'm going to give you a couple names. Howard Dean, Ron Paul. These are guys who did spectacularly well on the internet. I mean, Ron Paul, on the Republican side, won your TechCrunch primary voting. But as you said, he has a lot of rabid followers on the internet. But Howard Dean and Ron Paul aren't able to translate that, the winning on the tech side, winning in the net community, to real world votes.
Right.
I mean, there's no way Ron Paul is winning this election as much as he may hope that he was. Why is that? Why is it that success on the internet doesn't necessarily translate into the real world?
That's a tough question. First of all, I don't think it's fair to put Ron Paul and Howard Dean in the same bucket. Social networking didn't exist the last time around. Howard Dean was showing some early sort of success in getting online donations made. But the amount of work that he did on the internet, well, it appeared to be a lot back then, is nothing compared to what the candidates are doing today. So I would separate them somewhat. The way I would answer the Ron Paul question is the success that he's had. I mean, think, what does he have, 5 delegates already sort of lining?
Something like that.
I mean, he's in 4th, right?
Right.
He has no chance of getting the nomination, but he's probably going to split the Republican vote. Thank God he's not an independent candidate for the Republicans. But the level of success he has had is probably due to what he's done on the internet and nothing else. Because there are other candidates are sort of considered the crazy guys or, you know, sort of out there a little bit on the left. Mike Gravel is one. Dennis Kucinich is another, who haven't had any level of success on the internet, at least compared to Ron Paul. And so you can see that, you know, really they're on the far left. Ron Paul's on the far right. Eventually those they meet sort of anyway in their policies. But, you know, Ron Paul has been so good and he's so charismatic about going out on the internet and getting support that maybe that's why he's had at least some success.
Right. So the little bit that he's had is due to the internet.
Yeah. And the internet appeals to niche audiences. And, you know, so you're always going to – if you're an extremist – and I know it's unfair to call Ron Paul an extremist. And Ron Paul supporters are going to go on my blog as they hear this and they're going to trash me for that. And I'm okay with that. But his positions are rather extreme relative to mainstream middle America that, you know, would vote for a Bush or a Kerry or Gore or something like that. He's kind of out there. Well, you're always going to find lots of people that agree with you on the internet, and that might be millions of people that still can't really affect a national election, but they're going to be rabidly in support of you on the internet. And that's, you know, that's a great thing.
Right.
But it's not going to lead to him winning the presidential election.
Because it's just not enough people.
It's just not enough people. People aren't willing to go there yet. They don't want, you know, police officers the streets. They don't want government to stop all funding of anything.
Right.
There's just certain things. I mean, libertarians have wonderful viewpoints that make a lot of sense in theory, like communism does, but in practice, a lot of these things really don't work, and people want middle-of-the-road sort of policies.
What? Every year, bloggers and the internet are having more and more of an impact on our elections.
Yeah.
I mean, as the difference between this year and 2004 and 2000 is probably as big as the difference will be from today to 2012.
Yeah.
What can internet journalists, bloggers, learn from the so-called dead tree media, the mainstream media? Yeah. And then what can we here at the radio station learn from the bloggers?
So there's all, it's funny now, because as a segue, I'm fascinated by all the buttons and lights in front of me. And as a blogger, I do podcasts, which is, you know, similar to what we're doing, but it's nothing near as fancy. If I just start pushing these buttons, are things going to go wrong?
If you start pushing the buttons, you may start playing commercials.
Oh.
Which,
it's extra revenue. Actually, do I get a cut of revenue? Anything I play? So I think, the thing that resonates, I think, about blogging, you didn't actually ask this question, but I'm going to answer it anyway because this is a question I want to answer, is the thing that resonates with blogging isn't that the writing's – I'm a terrible writer. I tend not to fact check enough, and I also don't balance my pieces. I tend to go, you know, more of a columnist than anything. Those are all flaws in a way, but they also – show a real sort of human voice when I talk, as opposed to, say, the New York Times, which the New York Times is awesome. I love the New York Times. It's one of the best publications out there. But the voice that comes through is sometimes sterile. You know, well-researched pieces that have a big balance. You don't know where the writer stands and that kind of thing. So the human element of the blogs, I think, is important, as well as the podcasting. But then the more important piece is the fact that there's as soon as you post – There's communication back from your readers in the form of comments. It's so simple, but they get to say whatever they want. They can say it anonymously. They can say it with their own name. They can do whatever they want. But these conversations break out, and those conversations are what's so interesting. If you look at an average post that I write, you know, I try to be a little controversial, say something that I think is true, but be controversial. The interesting part isn't what I write. It's what all my readers write underneath, with maybe 100 comments that just go all over the place. The endorsement we made of Barack and McCain this morning showed that. I think when I left to come here to record this with you, there were 150 or 160 comments. Mm-hmm. 90 of them were from Ron Paul supporters calling me an idiot, and the rest were mostly normal people calling the Ron Paul supporters idiots. But there was some really good additional content in there, and that's what makes it so special. So I think looking to the future, anything that's going to facilitate more discussion and more interesting debates in real time, breaking out in niche audiences around the world on the internet, is going to be successful.
Then here's a follow-up. Is it necessary for the New York Times to follow your lead? Or is there room?
Well, they are. And not my lead, but bloggers.
Is it necessary to have both?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that the New York Times now allows comments on blog, right, on articles. They also are putting a lot of time into blogs. So
right,
the writers are blogging and loving it, by the way.
And there's a lot. I mean, Politico.com, there's a lot of political blogs out there done by very good writers. But like you said, yours is a very human approach. You are not even going to hide the fact that you're going to be a Obama supporter. That's necessary. Is that necessary nowadays, along with the New York Times, which is going to try and hold itself above the fray?
The New York Times, the only problem with the New York Times is that they have a lot of people, and their revenue might shrink less from blogs and more from like the Craigslist effect and people taking away a lot of advertising dollars and classified dollars, just in newspapers in general, can hurt them. So their overhead, that's the real problem with newspapers, is really the overhead. It's nothing else. I like to think of, you know, where audiences go is they're going to go where they find interesting content. Mm-hmm. And really that's, they're going to find the writers and the talent that they personally like. And my writing brings a big enough audience that I can run a small business from it. Mm-hmm. And that means I'm going to be successful. And if there's a lot of people like me, they're going to take a lot of money and page views away from big media. But really, you know, if you think about the Wall Street Journal has Walt Mossberg. I mean, he's a god, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
I love reading Walt Mossberg. They're, you know, and they probably pay him $1 million a year or more. Yeah. And he's worth every penny. And as long as they have him, they're going to have that audience. Now, what I tell Walt, not that he asks me very often what my opinion is that, you know, he should leave and start his own brand, and that each piece of talent should be its own micro brand. And then there'll be other businesses that sort of spring up that sort of grab the micro brands and aggregate them and compete directly with the New York Times. Right. But what I've said is if you write or you create content, you should be on your own. It's easy to say for me when I don't have a job and have to support myself, and it's really hard to do when you have a mortgage and a family, right, and you have to leave a paycheck, but my advice is you should be on your own, build your brand, compete in the marketplace, and see what kind of audience you get. And if you do really well, you're going to make a lot of money. If you don't do well, my argument is you probably weren't going to make it in the big company anyway.